Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Isn't that what I just said? What is wrong with you?
Is it the Pelicans? I didn't know it was the Pelicans.
Oh,
I
know
like, nothing like, about the word Pelicans.
Yes.
I worked during the fucking day, okay?
And so then I'm doing this, and then he touches me, and I swear to God, this is going to sound, this is probably one of those you want to pull off the audio for your promo. He touches me with his voodoo stick.
Until you fancy to make a decision, Scott's stuck twisting in the wind, a pawn in your sick, cruel game of vacation domination. I don't know what the fuck the Department of Health is. I think this whole thing's a load of horseshit, Matt.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and joining me, as always, my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. It is always a pleasure to talk to you. Welcome, PTB Nation, to episode, what do we think, 215 of the Place to Be podcast. And we've had like so many different diverse type of episodes, JR, over the past, you know, month. That we haven't done the old standby in a while.
No, it has been a long time.
Yeah, old reliable, if you will. We'll really scare the crap out of them tonight. Because tonight, of course, for the first time in over a month, V Squared makes its return. Yes, the Vintage Vault, for those that forgot. Not really. An interesting show tonight, JR. I always like this show. But it is very... it could be divisive at times, depending on your point of view. So let's see if I'm really going to scare the crap out of him, because it's been a while. Let's see. I don't see him. Maybe he forgot. Maybe he thought that we weren't in. Okay. Tonight.
Hey, what is going on here?
I knew you were hiding back there, you fat fuck. All right. For tonight, JR, after a very volatile and exciting WrestleMania in Philadelphia, to quote Bob Dylan, the times, they are a-changin'.
The encounter is simply a battle between two uniquely divergent superstars. The WWF champion, unpredictable and defiant. The so-called people's champion, arrogant yet refined. Two distinct individuals whose only common bond is the mutual contempt they harbor for each other. But like life, nothing of consequence is ever black and white. Tonight is really about two athletes more similar than not. Two men blessed with charisma, youth, and an undying heart. Two supernovas burning brightest amidst an infinite galaxy of stars. Like two heirs to a single throne, two reverent knights courting the fair princess, they are two men deserving what only one can have. Two fearless warriors of courage and distinction. Two men who have sacrificed their bodies and gutted their souls for the opportunity to glow ever so briefly in the fleeting light of fame. Tonight, only one man can walk away the victor. Only one man can raise the coveted grail. Two men, both worthy sovereigns in a world that can be ruled by only one. And now,
All right. Another lot going on there, as always.
Yes. Yes.
Supernova is burning bright.
Yes. Providence. Well, well written again. Mm-hmm. Yes. Everything worked well there as the, and we're going to, and they're all going to be great, at least, well, they'll be great pretty much permanently.
Yeah.
But yeah. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault here on the Place to Be podcast, we bring you Backlash 1999. A debut title.
Mm-hmm.
JR.
One and, that would endear on for a while.
Yeah.
And
it would be, it'd be a standard bearer. Yeah. It'd be a standard bearer for the next, almost 10 years. And another special thing about this show, kind of an anomaly, is that it is in someone's home office, but the office was vacant.
Will you stop?
I'm sorry, Gorilla. My apologies. What I like most about that open, and we'll get into it more when we get to the main event, is how much one superstar has really risen and is at the level that Steve Austin is. And
yeah.
And it's just treated so, he's treated so equally. I'm talking about The Rock, of course, but we'll get more into that a little bit later on.
Yeah, because I picked up on the same thing, not only equally, but almost as faces, as, you know, on the same level. Not, this is no longer about a rivalry. It's more just about these guys that are equals clashing for the world title.
Exactly. All right, let us begin. Because the undercard is unique and has some high points and a couple low points as well. Here we go. April 25th,
1992.
No, there was no April pay-per-view in 1992. Maybe there could have been. 1999, live from my PIC's home office, the Providence Civic Center, PCC, pre-dunk, in Providence, Rhode Island. We already know the backstory of the building. Your attendance, it's kind of an odd number. Well, maybe not. 10,939. Doesn't seem like a lot.
Well, it only holds about probably the time, what, 11,000 or so?
Really?
Well, 12,400 for basketball.
I always feel like it holds
more. That's renovated.
Yeah, I don't know why. Okay, so it's a good crowd then. 10,939. Yeah,
it's probably close to a sellout.
Yeah. Buy rate, 1.06. Awesome. And your announcers back in the seat permanently after taking a few months off to clear up another bad case of Bell's palsy. Good old JR, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler. The voices of the Attitude Era.
And Ross actually had only returned to the booth the week before on Raw. As early as 2 weeks before this, he was still doing the stuff with Dr. Death. They were coming out and attacking guys and still pushing that gimmick. And then the week before, a guy we're going to talk a lot about later, Shane McMahon, who's kind of on a power trip, basically punishes Michael Cole and puts JR back in the booth. Actually, I think Vince does it, and then Shane comes out and rips both guys. I believe that's how it goes down. Vince actually puts JR back out there. So, and we'll get to why Vince had a change of heart as we move along. But yes. So, yeah, JR back in the booth, and the whole storyline with Dr. Death seems to have faded away now by this point.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, too, because I think he was a guy that we always talked about that would actually be you know, pretty good in this era, but we went into him a lot.
Yeah, and it's funny to think that was still, I always assumed it ended with him returning at Mania and doing the main event. I kind of forget that he still lingered on for a couple weeks.
Exactly. But he's back in the seat with Lawler, who's, he's not quite annoying yet when it comes to a certain...
It's around this time. I mean, I was doing some research and... you know, watching some shows and reading CRZ's recaps, and the Lawler shit with some of the females was really starting to get overbearing, and CRZ just is like losing his mind in these reviews on it. And it was definitely 99 is where it really picks up.
Yes, and he does it a couple times in one particular match on this show here. So there is heat. We don't have matches, but something big happened on Heat, which we'll get to later on. It involves the main event.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that later. But there was a Heat, but there were no matches to discuss. They really didn't do that many anymore. I mean, they still did them, but they would kind of go through a stretch where it would pretty much be, at least in pay-per-view nights, they would do a lot of plot point stuff, but not really any matches per se.
I don't do any tricks.
He wasn't there. Wouldn't it be great if you saw him? Imagine he's like at Ruggieri's getting like pork chops or something.
Great.
With his, you know, pink polo shirt. All right, let's dive right in. Our opener is an interesting six-man tag because we're going to talk about Shades of Grey tonight, which we've discussed often during the first almost year plus of the Attitude Era. Because I have an issue with it at this show, because I think he goes a little too far with it. Of course, talking about Vince Russo, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Well, also, this is an interesting show because, you know, leading into Mania, we knew where they were headed. We were seeing the arc of Steve Austin versus the Corporation and The Rock as the corporate champ. And now, for the first time, we have to mix things up again a little bit at the top of the card and get some different storylines going. So this was an interesting month and an interesting show to see exactly how they were going to start doing different things instead of that same old, not that it was bad in any way, but that same story we've been telling since at least, you know, SummerSlam into Survivor Series.
Right, exactly. It's a six-man tag, and it is the first feud involving one of two heel factions going on in the company right now. The team of Midian, which, by the way, his name was spelled wrong in the graphic when he came out. I don't know if you caught that today. Midian, of course, usually was spelled M-I-D-E-O-N, but on the graphic, when he was walking up to the ring, it was spelled M-I-D-I-A-N.
Yeah, they struggled with his name a lot early on. First, they used to call him Minion, and then it was Midian like that, and then the E-O-N and all over the place.
It's very weird. And the Acolytes, of course, Bradshaw and Farooq, taking on The Brood. Now, if you remember, last month at WrestleMania 15, The Brood was part of the Ministry.
Yes.
But Christian botched something up and then ended up getting punished.
Yeah, they fucked up because Undertaker and the Ministry had actually captured the daughter of Vince McMahon, Stephanie, who we'll get to again later, as well. And Christian was attacked by Ken Shamrock, who was on the war path for Vince, trying to find out where Stephanie was. He had Christian in the ankle lock, and Christian couldn't take the pain, and he basically gave up where Stephanie was. So they were able to rescue her. Taker, who is increasingly becoming more and more bizarre and crazy at this point, is... He fired The Brood because of Christian's fuck up, and it was a pretty brutal beatdown. They hung Gangrel over the top, and then they tied Christian up to the symbol, and Shamrock and Mankind would make the save. But The Brood basically kind of becomes de facto faces in a way a little bit here for a bit in this mini feud with the Ministry.
Yes, crowd. And look, we've never complained. By the way, of course, as I was mentioning, the first Providence pay-per-view you were not at.
Yeah, I was at school, and we just didn't have a car freshman year, so we really didn't have a way to get down and back on a Sunday night. And I didn't see it happening to talk my parents into coming to get me and let me skip school Monday.
There was no limo in your future here. So
no, the only way really would have been to just ask if I could skip class Monday, but there's no way they were going to let that go. And there was no Andy to come save me this time like he did for Lowell. He was off in Chicago. So
yes. Would you have gone if you had the ability to?
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure we would have went.
Okay. Curious if you were, I was just asking because I figured at the time, was the card good enough? I mean, obviously it was. I mean, the main event.
Yeah, I think so.
Main event alone would have done it for me. So.
Yeah, and any pay-per-view. I mean, this is a weird show to me, too, because I don't think I saw it immediately afterwards. I think it was a little while before I saw it, so it was kind of a blind spot for a while.
So this six-man tag is involving, you know, once again, this happens more than once tonight where guys that you thought were all heels, but you got to start rooting for them, even though you're not used to rooting for them. The Brood were kind of, you know, were heels throughout most of the Build-A-Mania, but now you got to root for them, and it's very strange. You're not sure what's going on. It happens more than once.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what the problem is. It's that they were almost punished by their own success in a way, or fans are punished for being so great because they were always so hot and doing so well and really into everything that they just assumed they could get away with any matchup and the fans would be into it. And sometimes it worked and sometimes it backfired. I think here it backfired a little bit. I think this crowd is good on and off, but I think for this match it would just flat because we've been given no reason to care about any of these guys.
Right.
And, you know, we're into the Ministry, but these are not the guys you want to really be into at this point in the Ministry.
Right.
And the Brood were really cool, but they had been, you know, involved in hangings and everything else up until this point a week before, and I just wasn't compelled enough to really get behind them. So it ends up being an okay match at just under 12 minutes, but nothing the crowd really gets into.
Right. And the match is kind of slow and lumbering. I mean, you've got a huge change in styles here. You've got the Midian and the Acolyte, slow, you know, lumbering big guys, power moves. And then, of course, you got three fast, high flyer type guys. So it was a very weird match, and the flow's kind of scattered. And again, the crowd doesn't really help matters.
Well, I think we can come out and say it. I mean, Midian's just not very good in the ring.
No.
Bradshaw was okay, serviceable at this point, and Farouk was getting better. He had gotten himself into really good shape, but still not someone that's going to work, you know, an awesome match or anything.
Right.
And the Brood are all young guys and still kind of getting it going, and they could put on good matches when programmed with the right people, and these three just were not the right people here. So it's kind of an interesting opener. Probably not would not have been my choice to start off a pay-per-view with six heels and no faces, and I don't know if they just thought they'd, you know, high fly their way to a good match, but it just didn't really work out. So it's okay, but and I'm fine with the finish, having the Ministry win, because they were the team getting the bigger push. The Brood is really just kind of bottomed out at this point. They needed to be rebooted a little bit, but the Ministry obviously needed the win more.
Yes, and so they get it, and Bradshaw pins Christian with a pretty stiff clothesline.
Yes.
As, of course, would now be starting to be called the clothesline from hell. Mm-hmm. About 11 and a half minutes, which is a little long. And we'll be saying that a lot tonight. There's a few matches on this show that are a little long.
I kind of like this show, though, because there wasn't a lot of fluff. We didn't have a lot of backstage interviews. Or it seemed like they really flowed quickly from match to match. A lot of in-ring stuff in the show, especially for this time period. I like that there's one point where Lawler says something about how Bradshaw doesn't like being called Bradshaw anymore or something. I don't know if they were going to change his name or what. I don't know if he just fucked up, but JR kind of corrected him right away.
Yeah, he did say that. They said he doesn't want to be. Yeah, he did say that. He just want to be called Bradshaw.
He's like, I don't know if he's going by Bradshaw anymore. So I don't know if he just screwed up and thought they changed his name too. I'm not sure, but I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. So the Ministry wins. Who are you to doubt Bradshaw's phony name, whatever it is.
Phony fun.
And, so the Ministry gets the win, about 11 and a half minutes, and we move on.
Yeah.
Next up is the third of three straight pay-per-view matches for these two guys, and they've been three really good matches.
Yeah.
Your World Wrestling Federation Hardcore Championship on the line, your champion, Hardcore Holly, who won it at the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, and then regained the title at WrestleMania in a triple threat. And now here takes on the guy that he's been holding off the last two pay-per-views, and that is Al Snow, getting big pops. And you've been talking about it for the past few shows, that he's really, you know, gotten great pops from the crowd. And
He does here. I mean, a lot of head chants, and the crowd kind of wakes up a little bit for him. I liked this, and the feud was pretty good heading in, because what happened was Snow kept helping Holly win matches because he wanted to be the one to defeat him for the Hardcore title. So Holly had a match like almost every week, and Snow kept coming out and helping him win. And one of the weeks, Snow actually defeated him in a non-title match, so that kind of put him in position for the title shot. He also would start mocking him. I don't know if it was before this one or the next pay-per-view where he was driving the little toy car down, making fun
of the
Sparky Plug thing.
Yeah, it was before that, yeah.
Yeah, so that was pretty good. I liked the build here. I liked how Snow was finally, you know, really been chasing this title for a while now, since, January?
Yep.
And after the start and stop with the Road Dogg, and then Holly getting involved, and then the WrestleMania tease, he finally gets another one-on-one shot here. And I think this is a match that should have been at Mania, because I really like this match. They brawled at 15 minutes. They brawled all around the ring. Mm-hmm. They went backstage a little bit. A lot of good shots, a lot of good teases, and I got into this one today.
I did too, because I liked, there was one stiff shot where Al just throws Holly into like the fender of like a Cadillac or something on the outside. It's not the most, in my opinion though, not the most violent match of the night. That one comes later.
Yeah.
But definitely really brought the goods. And these guys, you know, obviously Hardcore Holly works stiff already. So he brought a little extra in Al. You know, Al's an ECW alum, so he has no problem, you know, being taken the limit. So, just a fantastic match, and you know what?
We screwed up. There were some Sunday Night Heat matches for this show.
We didn't have any on our review. By the way, Bigelow34.proboards.com.
Yeah, there were actually four matches.
Jesus, really?
Yeah. Val Venus and Nicole Bass defeated D'Lo Brown and Ivory.
Okay.
Draws and Albert defeated Brian Christopher and Scott Taylor.
Wow.
Too much. Kane defeated the Big Boss Man. And Viscera defeated Test. So a couple of matches there, including the Corporation and then Viscera with the Ministry and a couple guys you may not have recognized the name from our reviews, but we'll get to over the coming months. So, yeah, four matches on this night on Heat.
Okay.
All under 3 minutes.
Yeah, of course. I was going to say, I mean, Kane obviously wrestled on Heat because he would not wrestle on the show, but he would make his appearance, and we'll tell you when later on. This match is really shows Al Snow's abilities, not only to keep a crowd going, but to really bring the violence. I mean, yeah, he's comedic, he's funny, he's got the head, but when it came to brass tacks, he was punishing Hardcore Holly, and obviously Holly does not hold back at all.
He's the complete hardcore package. I mean, he's the guy they really should have focused the division on, and they do. He's pretty much involved in it throughout the rest of the year, but he's the guy that really, when you're looking at WWF's perfect guy to kind of be involved in this division, it's him. Like you said, he could be funny, because this title does have comedic aspects to it. He can brawl, he can, you know, do a regular match, he connects with the crowd, he had solid promo skills, so he was kind of the all-around mid-card total package, and I thought it was good that they finally do put the title on him here. He used his head to hit Holly, and I liked the post-match interview, too, where I thought it was one of his better promos, and then it got derailed because Head starts talking to him, and he gets all messed up and throws Michael Cole out.
They do a nice superplex in this match, too, through a table, so they get a good hot spot midway through.
Yeah, I dug this one. I thought the crowd woke up for this one. And even though they went backstage for a while and then they made their way back out for the finish. But I like this. I think this is one of the best, probably the best hardcore pay-per-view match we've had so far since the title's been invented. I think it's a little bit better, actually, even than their fight in the Mississippi back at Valentine's Day.
At Valentine's Day Massacre. And that was a good match as well. So this, I think, is even better. So Al Snow finally grabs the, I wouldn't call it the brass ring, probably the aluminum foil ring.
The broken brass ring.
Yes. And is your new World Wrestling Federation Hardcore Champion. Speaking of champions, our next match is, in my opinion, really the one dud of the night. And the other reason this match is important is this match, the background leading in, creates a trend that we will see throughout 1999. And that is titles bouncing all over the place from 1 week to the next.
Oh yeah!
Don't even get a start on the World Wrestling Federation World Title. We'll get to that later. that's a record was set in 1999 for that. But your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion and the title on the line here now, JR. When you and I left Philadelphia, the DOGG, Road Dogg Jesse James, was our Intercontinental Champion.
Right, and that was asinine enough to begin with that he was even involved, and then. the night after, March 29th, Road Dogg lost to Goldust. Got some help from his family, comprised of Ryan Shamrock and Blue Meanie and all.
It's like the comedic
freaks.
Version of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Just all these freak shows hanging out together. It's very strange.
And then a couple weeks later, out of nowhere, Goldust lost the IC title to The Godfather.
What?
The guy you never expected to hold any kind of title. I don't know if this was just kind of a nostalgia run or kind of just a reward for always being a company guy that happened to get hot with this gimmick. I'm not sure what they saw to put the title on him. And the weird part is this match was already scheduled for the pay-per-view, and they still did the title change on Raw. So you would assume they were planning to maybe put the title right back on. God, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know what they were thinking. Now, we also have to note that this is Goldust's final pay-per-view appearance for quite a while.
Yeah.
Until January 2002, it's his final one. We're not going to do a record because he'll be on many more.
He bounces back and forth,
yeah. He would stick around on TV for a little bit, and in the booking plans, he was supposed to have a pretty big angle going on, something called GTV, which we'll get to over the summer. But the nagging back injury and other issues was kind of lingering. They finally cut him loose in June, and he would return to WCW towards the end of 99. And remain there until they closed up shop in 01. So Goldust has really been a stalwart in these reviews, Kyle. He's been around since late 95. Mm-hmm. Long time for us here. We've talked a lot about him.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we owe him one last...
All right, ready? Wow. You uncorked that one. Because the last few have been more like...
it's going to be a while before we get to do it again. So.
Exactly. And as I've mentioned ad nauseum over the last several reviews, several vaults, besides his back, of course, he's not in the right frame of mind. Vodka issues, painkiller issues. It's prevalent in his book.
It's too bad, too, because I like this storyline. I thought it was actually kind of interesting with the Blue Meanie stuff. And Blue Meanie does the Mock Sables grind in the beginning and says for all the, you know, guys that want to be him and all women that came to see him, he does the grind with his gut hanging out. And I kind of like this whole thing with him and Goldust. I thought it was interesting. I thought Goldust has been pretty good. Better than I remembered. Now that we're kind of, you know, reading the Zorro reviews and looking back at the times, he was actually better than... I always just kind of remember him as being dead in the water at this point, but not as bland and blah as I thought he was. So I've definitely enjoyed it. And let's talk more about... We'll get back to the match in a second, but where do you see Goldust's kind of legacy at this point when he left? Say he never came back. What do you think his legacy would have been?
I think it would have been a lot like, you know, like some of the other guys who had short runs, kind of like, you know, his career might have been similar, maybe to a lesser extent, like Razor Ramon, kind of a short, fast run, you know, living on the end of a lightning bolt, you know, very quickly, maybe not as many, obviously, you know, Razor had more title runs, but I think he'd be remembered like just another, you know, good, solid mid-carder and nothing more. I mean, you know, obviously the title reign in 96 is the one that's most remembered. And then, you know, 97 with Pillman. But 98 was quite forgettable. And most of this year was kind of forgettable, except for these last couple months.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that was kind of burnt by a lot of changes character-wise and not... You know, they all seem like logical developments, but he kind of turned face rather abruptly at the end of 96.
Right.
The problem is by halfway through 96, his character had been neutered so badly from the really creepy weirdo that he was that he got kind of to be a bland heel. So when he turned face, it boosted him a little bit, and he had a solid run in 97 with a long feud with Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And like you said, the Pillman stuff kind of rejuvenated him, and then they turned him heel again abruptly a year later. So every year he was turning, basically. And then he did all the weird, you know, artist formerly known as Goldust stuff, which I liked. I thought that was pretty good. And then they did the Dustin Runnels Preacher thing, and the knee injury derailed him and never really got going. And the problem was they tried to kind of make him a face, but at that point in time, that kind of character was a heel. So his legacy, I think, kind of took a hit, and then just back to the Goldust stuff and just kind of meanders around through 99. But a guy that I'll definitely miss talking about because he's always got something interesting going on in these reviews. I feel like we've rarely just had a Goldust match, I meant nothing. Maybe there's a few in there, but most usually had some kind of crazy angle going on. So kind of sad to see him go out here, but pretty fitting, I think, that his final pay-per-view match for a while is an IC title match, since that's where he was most synonymous with for a majority of this run.
Yeah, and I think he'll be missed to a certain extent because as we'll document throughout the rest of 99, the mid-card work rate-wise is average at best. So he'll be missed in that aspect, but he needed to go. I mean, his personal life was a disaster and he needed time to to fix things. Of course, he would go right on to WCW, and we'll get more into that strange, what he had more weirder there. We'll document that another day, but that might have even been stranger than Goldust. But the match itself is the reason we're getting more into this is because the match is nothing. It's slightly over 5 minutes. Godfather wins and retains the title. And that's
well, they do the whole thing with Meanie goes to throw powder
in
Godfather's face. He misses and throws it in Goldust's. So Goldust can't see, and he starts attacking the Meanie, gives him the Shattered Dreams. And then Meanie accidentally misses a splash and splashes Goldust on a cover by Godfather. And then Godfather gets to win with the pimp drop. So this really kind of finishes off the union between Meanie and Goldust before Goldust leaves. And I think this is it for Meanie, too. I don't think we see him on pay-per-view again either. So... a short-lived union that's been pretty entertaining over the last few months goes by the wayside. Godfather, unlikely IC champion leaving Providence on this night.
Yes. So our first two title matches end up becoming our first two title changes.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
No title changes.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Godfather retains your Intercontinental title. So one for two.
I don't know!
Of course you don't. So there you go. The Godfather retaining his Intercontinental Championship, and the match is nothing stellar. And this is weird. Not mentioning Goldust in any match for quite a while is going to be very strange. I'm not going to lie. Very weird. But he is gone for quite a while. Next up, another match that involves... The next match is a number one contenders match. And this is another one that really makes no sense. It's kind of weird. Again, follow along with us, bigelow34.proboards.com, because I'm perusing your comments, JR, and I'm kind of mirroring them, but I've obviously let you...
I don't think this one was that weird, the tag match.
Yeah.
It was built up well enough, because we actually had a title change, where our champions, Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart, had actually lost the tag team title, Scott.
Yeah. What?
Yes, on Raw, to an unlikely duo, Kane and X-Pac.
Wow. Wow. Night after WrestleMania.
Yep.
March 30th.
These guys have kind of become friendly with the destruction of DX. Kane and X-Pac started kind of hanging out a little bit. They knock off the champs. But here we have a number one contenders match between the Outlaws and Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart to determine who would actually get a title shot on the first episode of, you know?
Yes.
WWF SmackDown.
That's right.
It was actually
that Thursday night, following Thursday. SmackDown from the New Haven Coliseum.
Yep. So this was not actually the first episode. It was the kind of a pilot test airing.
Yeah, it was a test episode. Obviously, the show itself will start later on in the year, and we'll talk about it when we get there.
Yeah, this was just they wanted to see if it could work on a Thursday night, if they could do a special second show on network television. So a pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So you know they were loading up the show. So we have a very interesting tag match. Now, I don't know if maybe you meant the finish is surprising.
No, yes, the finish is surprising. The Outlaws they haven't been stellar in the ring in a while. And I had mentioned that. I said that in my comments. Their work rate kind of struggled a little bit. But we talked about throughout 98 that they didn't really know what they were doing. Were they the champions and then they weren't. And then there was other feuds going on and they were the only tag team. And here they are. But obviously, they're in a weird role because of something that happened at WrestleMania, which we'll talk about in a couple of matches from now. And they take on a legit team, former champions, and who really were in a good groove, had great heat. And the reason they had great heat is because of their manager, as, of course, Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart had the lovely Deborah as their valet. And... she, of course, still would wear at times the very short-skirted business suit. Not on this night, though.
No.
No. I think she had on...
Very
like
different.
I think she had on like a Kleenex. No.
Yeah.
She had on a studded...
something that would definitely make Jay Hinchy blush.
Yes. He was slightly uncomfortable. It was... I don't know what the hell it was. It was like a... I don't know if it was a bikini or a bra and panty combo. It was black, studded... it was a top piece and a bottom piece
and a jacket.
That was it. And then like a little red, like, I don't know, like a Usher jacket,
like
that
Mrs.
women wear at like Radio City, like Mike McGurk, like a Mike McGurk jacket,
like Mrs. Price, that Jim would borrow.
Yes, exactly. Except the tags were off because he'd have to put it back in his mother's closet.
So just to clarify, by the way, the tag title change was actually on the week after Mania. It was taped two nights later on March 30th, but it aired 4/5.
Okay.
The night after WrestleMania, the champs at that time, Owen and Jeff Jarrett, actually defeated your boys, the Legion of Doom, one of their final appearances. Yeah.
Well, wouldn't surprise me. I shouldn't be surprised at that.
And then it was the next week that Kane and X-Pac won the tag titles.
Okay. So Kane and X-Pac are your tag team champions. And we'll talk more about them a couple matches from now in terms of their chemistry, but they've been tremendous.
Yeah,
that was a perfect combination for them. Perfect combination for them to get together, and they are awaiting the winner of this match.
Mm-hmm.
The match I liked. Would you say this was the Outlaws' best match in a while?
Yeah, I mean, when was their last pay per view match as a team? Was Rock Bottom, and that was not very good.
No.
Right, since then they've kind of been going singles, and I think it was fitting to put them back together here. Singles runs had kind of faltered, but as we'll see, it'll be short-lived, so this is almost like kind of a final hurrah for a while. Yeah, I mean, I would have liked to see Jarrett Owen win here. I didn't think the Outlaws, outside of, I guess it ends up being for storyline purposes, but from pure quality standpoint, I think Jarrett and Owen deserve the win more. I watched them coming down to the ring, kind of thought of two things.
Mm-hmm.
They looked like a great team, one that deserved to be better remembered in the annals of history, one that should have probably almost been like Bulldog and Owen a couple years earlier, just a long run dominating the tag scene. Instead, they kind of came at the wrong time. Two, Jarrett and Deborah were clearly pushed as the stars here.
Mm-hmm.
They were, you know, they used their music. They were always front and center. Owen was always kind of behind. Jarrett seems to be the one they focus a lot more on commentary and a different, you know, just pushing of the team. So kind of sad for Owen in that respect. But I think a team that probably deserved a more fruitful push. I mean, I know they had the gold and they were pushed for a while, but it only ends up really being about 4 months.
That's a great point, JR. I never really thought of that till you just said it about the whole Owen was kind of a, you know, an afterthought. I never really thought of that till you just said that. That's a great point. You know, it was all about because Deborah was the one Jarrett was the one covering Deborah whenever she would, you know, try to shake her wiles, and Owen would just kind of sit there, and it was almost like Owen was the grizzled veteran kind of in the background. And
yeah, I mean, he wasn't completely ignored, but he definitely was not pushed as one of the stars of the team. To me, Jarrett and Deborah were kind of the stars, and Owen was just there.
Right.
And yeah, maybe it fit his personality for the best, but it's kind of sad to see him go out like that. Mm-hmm. And as we'll talk about Monday, you know, this would end up being Owen Hart's final pay-per-view match.
Mm-hmm.
So sad to see it be a loss. Sad to see it be in a manner that he's not really the focus point.
Right. And he eats the pin, which is even worse.
Yeah.
The New Age Outlaws win the match. It's about 10 and a half minutes. Billy Gunn hits a famouser. And the New Age Outlaws are your number one contenders. And they would take on their teammate, X-Pac. Hmm. Do you guys understand like the weird, what the hell we're trying to explain here? Just nothing made any sense here. I don't get it.
I mean, when they said they blurred the lines and the shades, I mean, this is legitimate stuff. Like, they really did just kind of eliminate those all lines, and they just had guys fight, just everyone for themselves, and guys just fought. And while it was a nice break from the monotony, on the flip side, it just kind of hurt the crowds sometimes because you didn't know who to cheer for, and it just became confusing. And I get why they did it, and it doesn't last that long. I mean, when you look back, it seems like it was forever that things were like this, but it's really not that long. By, you know, the late in the year, they're back to kind of the general old school philosophy. But here at this point, they're still really just mixing shit up.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's very, very weird. Was this focusing on the Outlaws regaining the titles? I don't know. I don't know what their thinking was, but it just was very weird that a really good established heel team was going to end up taking a backseat to a team that would eventually just not even be together anymore because DX is just a complete flux isn't even the word for it.
No. Cluster flux.
cluster flux. Non sequitur cluster flux. We can't even get... We have to wait till we get to a match before we can really lay out the problem here. I don't want to jump too far ahead. So the New Age Outlaws are your number one contenders for the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team titles, which is not even on the line at this show. And there's a big reason for that. And you have just seen Owen Hart's last match. Now, you know, we're not at the time we didn't know that. So we can't be like, oh, what did you think of his career? We can't really, because we all know, the end game here.
Yeah, we'll get to it Monday night.
And we'll get more into that next week. So the Outlaws win and are your number one contenders. And it was a good match. It was, I think, honestly, it was probably the Outlaws' best match in months as a team.
I mean, pay-per-view wise, I mean, the dumpster match wasn't that great at SummerSlam. I mean, maybe since...
Mania, WrestleMania.
Fuck yeah, man. No, the dumpster with Kane and Mankind. Wasn't that a dumpster?
Oh, I'm sorry. SummerSlam 98. I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I would say, I'd say maybe since Mania.
Yeah. Weird.
Over a year.
But they win the match and then they're number one contenders. Okay. This next match is one of the ones that I have to admit when I watched the show again today, JR. I have to say I had a change of heart about it. Now there's some issues with the match that I still have, but in terms of pure entertainment value, it is 10 times better than I remember it. the last time I watched it when I first wrote the when we put the review on our message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. It is the second ever pay-per-view boiler room brawl. It involves one guy who was in the first one, because who else could really
be? How much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
Precisely, him. Mick Foley, a.k.a. Mankind, taking on member of the corporate... No. He's in D... No. He's in the... No, that's not till for a while. I don't know what he is. I don't know! We're talking about the Big Show. In a boiler room brawl. Now, of course, this goes back to Mania when these two wrestled in a match for who would get the who would referee the Steve Austin Rock title match.
You've got to be kidding me.
I'm not. The problem is the next night, Big Show ends up helping Steve Austin. Remember, he pulls down the the Titantron, mm-hmm. and they rip it with the thing and.
He had pretty much turned at Mania when Vince bitched him out and he punched Vince and got arrested and everything.
Yeah.
So if we're going to do the Paul White Big Show face heel counter, we're at one now already.
Yeah, we're at one, yes.
2 months in.
But he's facing Mankind.
Well, here's the story, because they're actually, they did kind of follow along here. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to fight as revenge for Mania, because they were both pissed off. In the meantime, Big Show turns face on Vince and the corporation and Shane. And they kind of start earning mutual respect, him and Mankind. They start kind of helping each other. But for pride and for revenge of Mania, they still want to have their match. So it almost becomes like a friendly fire kind of match, you know? So, you're right?
No, I was about to say, I was being funny because I, not the way that the match actually goes. It doesn't seem that way. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, that was the story, though. So,
yeah.
The allegiance isn't fully there, but Big Show and Mankind are both on the same side of the coin, but the match was already set up, and being two proud guys, they wanted to still go at it. Now, there are rumors, and I think it's in Foley's book, and even if you go by the poster, that he was actually supposed to go to the main event here and face Austin for the title. I mean, I don't know how that would have worked or where it would have went, but they mixed it up instead. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't think we mentioned this at WrestleMania because we were kind of hustling towards the end. Did we talk about this? Do you remember?
The thing with Sean?
Yeah.
Yes.
We did? How he was supposed to be a triple threat?
I believe we alluded to it.
All right, well, just in case we didn't, WrestleMania, according to Mick Foley in his book, was supposed to be a triple threat match with Rock and Austin and Foley, since they were all involved in the title picture. I think we did talk about this. But Sean got into Vince's ear and convinced him that the WrestleMania main event should always be one-on-one. So Sean lobbied for it to be Austin versus Foley and leave the Rock out. Vince decided to go with Rock and Austin instead. So I think you're right. I think we did talk about it.
Yeah, we did allude to it. But my favorite line is in our fun fact on our message board. Of course, if you've watched the Shawn Michaels DVD, you know he was hyped up on painkillers and probably didn't know what he was talking about anyway.
Yeah, he probably didn't know what the hell a triple threat match was.
But. Probably forgot the discussion anyway. What's funny is, and this is probably where the long-standing issues began, apparently, between The Rock and Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
What was Shawn's hard on with?
Oh, they had issue with The Rock. Rock was a Bret Hart guy.
Oh, all right.
And this is probably something we could talk to Kevin about. We have him on in a couple of weeks. But he was a Bret Hart guy, Rock. He always kind of aligned himself with Bret. And I think that was where the heat with DX, the click was.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Rock would get in and, you know, he would end up winning the war anyway because his career would, well, speaks for itself. But yep. So these two would have a boiler room brawl. You don't know whether to root for a Big Show or not. Foley is there. And this is where this begins the pretty much the next 9 months of just. This one's not bad because it's right in Mick's wheelhouse, but probably starting in like June into the summer, for the first time in a while, Mick just doesn't look great.
Yeah, and it's not even just in June.
It's not just
it
that
starts
he's,
right
it's
after
not just
this.
That he's
pretty
struggling.
Much. Yeah,
yeah.
He's just his body's just giving out. That's all. His body's just giving out.
And I can see why.
Yeah.
Big Show is pummeling him in this match.
Yeah.
I mean, he's slamming him on metal. I mean, I was stunned when I was watching this match today. How how stiff Big Show was. I mean, he was beating the shit out of Mick in this match.
Well, knowing Mick, I'm sure he was setting out to put Big Show over Big and make him look like a threat again and kind of reestablish him. And what better way to do that than have him beat the shit out of Mick Foley in a boiler room? So I think that was part of it. You know, the spots with the glass are gross.
Yes.
I mean, the whole thing was just kind of forgotten. And it bothers me a little bit again now for the second show in a row, stuff that I don't think Mick Foley needed to be doing to his body because it was going to be forgotten anyway in the middle of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the stupid stunts at Mania he kind of did with Big Show falling on him and the chokeslam through the chair. I think he just kept feeling like he was going to let his fans down if he didn't do something crazy. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't needed. Like, they didn't really need to have him punching through shards of glass. And I just don't think it was necessary. This wasn't a blood feud. It wasn't anything that deserved that. They would have been better off just doing some kind of tag here with Mick and Big Show against the Corporation, or just a regular match or something with the one big spot. We didn't need this brutality for 8 minutes.
No, and I mean, it's a serious. I mean, obviously the most memorable injury, like you said, JR, when Mick puts his hand through the glass, and I mean, he's got a pretty serious cut. I mean, his hand's pretty much useless the last like 3 minutes of the match.
Yeah,
he's not leaning on anything. His whole palm is covered in blood. There's another spot where Big Show like slams Mick on top of like this pile of stuff. It's like pieces of wood and nails and glass shards, and it was ridiculous. And you're absolutely right. I mean, for a match that's fifth on the card, I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, they really need to be killing himself.
Is it not even a high profile feud on the show? I mean, we got bigger things coming up.
Oh, much bigger things.
Again, much bigger things.
I mean, I've voiced my concern with stuff like this in the past, that there are times when you just don't need to do this kind of thing. And right. I know, I get at the time, I know it's easy to look back in hindsight, but at the time, things were different. We were more bloodthirsty. We were used to seeing this. The war was on. Yep. Guys felt the need that they had to go all out. That was just what society and wrestling fans were clamoring for. So it's easy to sit back now and say it was dumb and wasted. Right. And criticize, but it was. It really was. It just wasn't needed. And this match is not even remembered. I mean, look, you said it yourself. And, you know, if me and you, who I think rank pretty high on the wrestling, you know, nerd knowledge scale,
yes,
have a match where we don't really remember or give credit to, and there are going to be some, but that probably shows that maybe it wasn't worth the spot.
Right. And for fifth on a, what is it, seven match card, it was pretty high up. Yet at the same time, like you said earlier, this wasn't even a feud. I mean, it was, but it wasn't. I don't know. I was very entertained by it, though. I thought it was a great match. It was very stiff.
Well, no wonder why they kept doing it. Clowns like you were entertained by the
Yes, I'm entertained by Foley losing his hand. No. I mean, it was entertaining in this fact that Foley got the job done in terms of, I mean, he won the match. He pushed Big Show into a table or something, which was the catalyst for a myriad of steel pipes to fall from a pile and bury the Big Show. And Foley, you know, crawled with one hand, you know, out the door to win the match. So Foley wins. His hand is a cut-up disaster, which was unnecessary. But, I mean, the point is, JR, is I'm not saying that the moves Big Show did to Mick, being slammed on the concrete or on the... I mean, that's one thing, because you could protect yourself on a slam. But the glass thing is the thing that totally...
Yeah.
Because you're not exactly in the ring. I mean, you're in the back room of the Providence Civic Center. I mean, God only knows what the hell's back there, you know. Rodents and dirt, and you know, you're gonna have an open cut on your hand. I mean, it's crazy, it's ridiculous.
Yep,
so
I agree.
Yeah,
I'm on board.
Mankind wins, so Big Show's now what, 0-2?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense either.
Yeah,
it's not like again that he needed to win the blow off. I mean, he won at Mania, I know it was a DQ. Big Show just spiraling the toilet quickly. And
why?
To me, this is a match that he really should have won.
Yeah, and he dominated it. And that's the whole point. I mean, Mick got a couple moves in the glass and all that, but really, Big Show just absolutely pummeled him.
Yeah.
And
great question.
And you don't even win? Weird. I had no idea what's going on here. No clue whatsoever. All right. We will take a break. because we do have two more matches left, or three more matches left. All huge storyline matches. Mm-hmm. I mean, pretty much a triple. I wouldn't say a triple main event, but maybe a main event match, World Wrestling Federation Championship.
And then two right under it, basically.
Yeah, and two big matches for other reasons, but this is where we'll really start. The Shades of Grey thing really just is definitely on point in these last matches.
50 Shades of Grey, daddy.
Where have you been, dear? All right, but first off, we are going to take a break.
I've been hiding Jeremy Nichols' covers in his closet.
Because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
He likes it! Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones. Ooh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best!
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
So a guy from across the pond and a dude from the south, Where the Big Boys Play. It's a great podcast. Harv and Chad are awesome. Check them out. Also check out WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Great message board, plenty of topics to browse, the Still Real to Us podcast, and much, much more. Also, our message board, which is awesome, Bigelow34.proboards.com. It's where PTB really began. Written reviews and a boatload of them. And PTB Nation, we have you to thank for that. Plus the territory wars, a whole lot more. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, you can head there. Also head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, and more details on that. Also, our good friend Graham Cawthon, historyofwwe.com, the best research site you will ever find. Also, another sponsor to the show, the Wrestling Forum, twfnews.com, their wrestling forum, a blog site, much, much more. The guys at TWF creating a wrestling media nation, many blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts. Yours could be included in the official forum of WrestleChat.net and the place to be. We've joined up as well. So check them out, find out what they're about at twfnews.com. Also, you can check out our show at GetThePointRadio.com, my good friend Mike. It's a great online radio station. If you're not in the mood for wrestling, but you want to listen to music, pop it on. He plays music all day long. But you can also check his archive on iTunes, and all of our shows are there as well. Big site.
This is Gary Michael Capetta, and this is the Place to Be podcast with Scott Riscola and Justin Rosero.
Okay, Nation, welcome back. We are in the midst, the throes of Backlash 1999. Yeah. We have three matches remaining, all very big ones with heavy, heavy storyline implications going on.
Yes. Yep.
And we are here to wrap it. So, Scott, why don't you get us all into match number six here from the Providence Civic Center.
Yes. Match number six. Well. Match number six.
Scotty Spice, Hunter Spice, Hawk Spice, Animal Spice,
Hawk Spice,
Flair Spice,
Flair Spice.
The new Spice Girls.
The sad thing is
Daddy Spice. It's,
the sad thing is, this isn't even a joke.
Jeremy Spice,
Jeremy Spice, Jordan Spice,
Chad Spice.
The sad. The sad thing is this is where it really gets pretty pretty hot and heavy.
Between DX or with you?
That depends on your point of view.
All right, we need someone to please Photoshop the Spice Girls with a Scotty Spice, Hunter Spice, Hawk Spice, Animal Spice, and Flair Spice.
And Flair Spice.
You will win a prize if you can do that successfully and make it good.
Triple H, obviously, the huge heel turn that took place at WrestleMania when he, you know, booted X-Pac in the gut, hit the pedigree, and allowed Shane McMahon to retain the European Championship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we knew it was going to be a return match, and X-Pac, who was brought in by Triple H the night after WrestleMania 14, a full year ago, wanted some revenge. So here it is.
And now the next night after WrestleMania on Raw, they actually fought, ended in a DQ when China got involved. Kane came out and made the save, so that is where the Kane and X-Pac alliance kicked in.
Yep.
Of course, the next week they would win the tag team titles and got that union underway. So now we kind of have this little feud going on. So 2 weeks later on 4/12, Kane and X-Pac teamed to defeat Triple H and Test. And Triple H turned on Test, threw him into the ring, and walked out on him after he got dumped to the floor. So Triple H really taking an assertive role within the corporation. And what I wanted to ask you, what did you think of seeing him alongside The Rock and these two kind of alpha dogs in the corporation for this month-long stretch?
Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, you thought it was cool?
Loved it. It was awesome. Yeah. This was the moment that I really realized that this was the moment that Triple H was waiting for career-wise for the first 4 years, was this moment to be the alpha male. And you can even see the split of... Quiet, Ginger. You could kind of see the split occur here, and it's prevalent when we get to the main event, who the fans wanted to see leave the corporation. Mm. But Triple H definitely asserted himself as the motherfucker who wanted to be the bat, who be the man.
Yeah, and I mean, that was his whole goal here. Was he's tired of being held back, tired of doing things the friendly way. He's just gonna be a douche and just wants to be the man. That's it, like you said.
It's very simple, and that's why I think that's why I got even more attached to the character, because it was just so straightforward.
You're both he was angry tired assholes.
He was tired of you know, being the funny guy, and he was tired of the mid-card joke feuds, and it was time for him to take his spot, and he was going to take it whether you liked it or not, and I was full on board with it. But the thing that really blows me away here is how great this match is. Obviously, click, guys. But that's irrelevant. I think if you ask me, JR, since this DX incarnation was created, who the best worker of the group was in this one year, in this last year stretch, the answer has got to be X-Pac.
Easily. Yeah, it's X-Pac on two levels. One by default, because Triple H was hurt for most the second half of 98, and the Outlaws just aren't very good. But also, he earned it. He worked very hard, and you remember we had Kevin on to wrap up 98. We talked about who kind of the unsung mid-card hero was, and I picked him. I thought he really carried a lot of the shows in 98 from an undercard perspective, and he's still doing great work here. Him and Kane have formed a very good alliance, an interesting alliance, and him as a face is really his best role when he's the plucky underdog face.
I agree.
He's a great selling. He has good facials. Mm-hmm. He can get tossed around by the heels and make hot comebacks and fly around a little bit. So I think he was always, when he was a heel, he's fine as a heel, but a little bit miscast. I thought he was always best when he's kind of the underdog face, and that's what he is here against his buddy Triple H, where we haven't really seen a match between these two. We've seen a couple of little ones here or there, like maybe that King of the Ring qualifying match in 98.
Right.
And a couple of other little ones, but we haven't really seen a big time match between them. And this is the first a lot of times you get these guys who you've been waiting and waiting for these friends or teammates to fight, and it disappoints. And this is the opposite. These guys worked well together and delivered, and they go 20 minutes. and really go all out. To me, it's a definite forgotten classic on this show, hidden, you know, three matches deep from the main event on a show that you don't always hear much about. But this is one, I don't know if it is on any compilations, but it definitely deserves to be on one if it's not.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look. We'll take a look in a moment from our good friend Graham Capthon and the history of WWE.com.
Graham Spice.
The reason the match is so good is, number one, a little history, because JR and King really made
not,
a point.
It's not in any DVDs.
No, it's not. Oh, bummer. It should be. I just lost my train of thought. Oh, the well-documented neck injury of X-Pac, which of course he suffered in WCW and kind of stepped to the fore, you know, here. And Triple H is just taking it. I mean, he's just dropping stiff knees right in the back of X-Pac's back, right in the back of his neck, just dropping shots on him.
Mm-hmm.
And JR is like, JR's in that stop the damn match mode.
Yeah. really great heat building on X-Pac. Just really well done.
Yeah,
just
it really,
really
was.
Feel bad for him as this match goes on. It's just so well built. Yeah, basic, too. You know, nothing over the top. Just all basic.
Yeah, and he's just getting, I mean, Triple H is just pummeling him with shots. And he's, the only bad thing about the whole package with Triple H, the tights were cool, but he would slowly move out of the long pants. But those, the tights were cool, is what in God's name was that entrance theme?
Yeah, it was definitely you could tell they were working on something better for him, but
yeah.
Well, because he had been using No Chance in Hell on Raw leading up to this, so I don't know why they didn't just let him stick with that till they had something.
It's like
better.
Jim Johnston pulled out.
Yeah,
oh, I gotta give him
guitar
something.
Riff 7.
Yeah, exactly. Let me pull out Hot Rocks number 25. You know, it's like some. It's terrible. But again, the match itself. Find it seriously. It's on. We saw that. We found the Jer and I found the whole show today on Daily Motion. Find it and watch it. It's a great match.
Mm-hmm.
Just telling a story. And I think X-Pac, in the whole scope of things, this match proves that the guy was a much better worker. Not just work rate, but the guy had his psychology down when he needed to be.
Yeah, I don't think he gets enough credit for that. He wasn't just the spot monkey. He knew how to work a match intelligently. Yep. And does. He still does. And they do that here. They do, and I like this. I thought it was a good blow-off, and it's not even the blow-off, but it's a good explosion match between DX members, and Triple H obviously gets a win. He needed it more, launching this heel run.
Right.
And you could explain the due to the neck injury why X-Pac falters.
Yes.
And he has other stuff going on anyway. So at first you wonder, oh, should they have done a tag title match on the show? But I don't think you could have done better than what they gave you here.
No,
and
absolutely
this
not.
Feud deserved a match here on pay-per-view, so... where did you think Triple H was headed at this time? Did you think he was ticketed for a world title run, or did you think he was going to still kind of maybe get back to the IC mix for a little bit before moving up?
I don't remember really being sure, because obviously we have to discuss. We'll discuss the main event in a couple matches. Because I don't really know what was going on in the main event scene. I knew eventually. I don't know when. But I knew eventually Triple H was due to be world champion. I really do. I really do think so. He was due to be world champion. I don't know when, if it wasn't going to be till 2000, or, but I knew he was due I don't know if it was during this calendar year that I thought it was going to happen. But I definitely think he had a plan. There was a plan for him, at least within the next year. I don't know when he was going to be world champion. I don't know if it's going to be the IC mix. The IC title seems to have gotten buried with the mid-card, you know, comedy gimmicks. So I don't know if he was slated for the IC champ. I think he was... Well, let me reserve that comment till after the main event, because it goes hand in hand.
All right.
But the answer to your question, no, I don't think he was slated for the IC title. I think that title was already slotted for the, you know, the D-Los and the Godfathers of the world. And the world title, I didn't think would come for at least a year yet. But a lot of things would, a lot of catalysts would kind of speed up that timeline, I think. And we'll document that over the next five, you know, four or five pay-per-views. But when we get to the main event, I'll coincide what I think the whole scope for Triple H was. But anyway, great match of the show. Triple H obviously wins, as JR said. He was more needed for him. But X-Pac put on some effort, let me tell you. Would you consider this his best? Do you think this match is better? How do I word this? Because we are dealing with two different kinds of... If you had to rank which of the two matches were better, this one or the one he had with Brett in 94, which would be better?
Is what I'm trying
to ask. But it's hard to tell because, again, it's two different eras, two different kinds of wrestlers.
I would...
Two different stories.
I'd probably rank the Brett one higher.
Okay.
That was such a good story.
Yeah, it was.
And it was such a sprint match. Mm. And I would maybe even put the Owen match from Raw in August of 94.
I always forget about that match.
Above this one. This one's up there, though. This is in his probably top three of five.
I always forget about that Owen match.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Was that an action zone?
No, it was from Raw.
Oh, okay.
It was Raw in August.
Okay.
I think it was when Owen was still trying to outdo Brett. So he said because Brett had a great match with the kid on Raw, he was going to do the same.
So it was leading towards the cage match at SummerSlam.
Okay. Yeah, and that was one of the first times I remember that match on Raw, Brett and Kid, where they actually came out and talked about the quality of a match a lot. Like, you know, every match was always, oh, what a great match, what a competitive match. I remember that one. They really talked about what a good, like almost like analysts or, you know, fans. Like just on Raw, they kept talking about it, like just how what a good high quality match it was, the match itself. Which is kind of unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I totally forgot about that. I totally forgot about that Owen match from Raw. But this match is fantastic. So again, the show's on Daily Motion. Check it out. It's a fantastic match. And Triple H gets his first big heel win and keeps the train moving. All right, this next match is where I really start the Shades of Grey thing really starts to irritate me. Even though I know
Hey, PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
Vince Kennedy McMahon Jr. here with your Hacksaw Jim Duggan WCW Rob Houston Memorial Update. Chris Cole, where the hell you been? I've been stalking your apartment, sitting across this empty dentist office for weeks, just waiting for the light to go on. Sitting here peering with my trench coat on and no slacks and binoculars, staring out the window.
I was on vacation in Pennsylvania, Vince, going through your old...
Who the fuck goes to Pennsylvania?
Old house show stomping grounds. I was in the Poconos. I was looking for that resort you used to do Raw in the mid-90s.
Well, you know, Chris Cole, I had kind of an accident today. I had the unfortunate occurrence of having an erection while I was taking a shit. I ended up pissing all over my underwear, and it was a fucking disaster. So I just decided not to wear them anymore, and I'm sitting here naked from the waist down with my trench coat on, just waiting. And I saw the light go on. I heard the Vintage Vault crank up. Very excited tonight.
Can I ask you a question, Vince?
Depends on the topic.
What are you going to do about Mr. Belding?
Who?
Are you put him on the payroll?
I don't know who the fuck Mr. Belding is. Let's go to the MGM Grand Garden Arena. April 5th, 1999. Jim Duggan defeated Lenny Lane. Who the fuck is Lenny Lane? Lenny Lane is in my ears and in my eyes. Beneath the blue suburban skies. Sounds like some kind of asshole Eric Bischoff would hire. Piece of shit. April 13th for Boise. Jim Duggan defeated Barry Darso. I don't know who that is either. Boise, Idaho. Isn't that where David Arquette's from? That documentary I saw about him. Where he became a wrestler?
Yes.
You ever seen that documentary?
Yes, I have.
And then the sequel to that documentary where he was a cop with a bunch of murders. Guy's had quite the life, David Arquette. He's a wrestler. He's a cop.
Indeed.
You can't write stories like that, Chris Colo. No matter how many piece of shit Hollywood writers I get, they can't put together tales like that.
Not at all. Not at all.
Real life. That's what we're trying to tap into. You sound despondent tonight, Chris Colo. What's the problem?
I'm a little nervous, Vince. You're,
why are you nervous?
We're buddies. You're outside with no pants on. I mean, I know you're you love the military and police and the fire, but I mean, you're in a
what?
Trench coat.
What's that anything to do with anything? Rotella's back.
You have those things on that hold your socks up.
Rotella's back with my bottle of Goldschlager. I'm out of here. Suck it, bitch. Eat my pussy right.
fucking Lenny Lane. Give me a fucking break. Rotella! Pick up these golden crystals and hand feed them to me.
Somewhere in heaven, George Harrison and John Lennon are smiling.
Somewhere in Illinois, Michael Vincent is listening to Lil' Kim with his daughter.
Michael Vincent's waiting for the next porn that's got Vincent a trench coat.
Michael Vincent went out and bought that Lil' Kim CD.
He wanted to know so bad what the song
was. He's the man.
All right. I asked Vince about the straps holding up your socks. Wow. He didn't know who Mr. Belding was. That made me a little nervous. Okay. This is the match where the Shades of Grey thing just totally goes out the window. We have dueling heel factions. So the question is, the hell you root for? I should have asked him that when he was here in his trench coat. Ken Shamrock, who's been a loyal member of the corporation since, October, November?
Yes. That's like 7 years in Vince Russo time.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. It's like, you know, Shamrock was in the Iron Sheik's corner in 1984. Taking on the head of the Ministry of Darkness. And that is, of course, The Undertaker. Complete with new cool, well, not cool, but the awesome rock entrance theme. Yep.
And just really off the fucking deep end.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just gone. And the whole thing is, they've actually taken this character in a weird turn where they're admitting that the man, Mark Calloway, has gone off the deep end and is believing this character. He believes that he's really this psychotic devil man. And so that's kind of the route they took it, that this guy's just gone crazy. And now he's trying to control the WWF, trying to take over the WWF. And to do so, he's torturing Vince McMahon. We saw the stuff leading into Mania. Coming out of it, he tries to kidnap his daughter. They're successful once, and again, Ken Shamrock made the save. The next week, he kidnaps Ryan Shamrock. Then they tried to get Deborah. Like, all this stuff is going on where they're just trying to really fuck with Vince. And Vince, at this point, keeps basically saying, I don't care about Austin. I don't care about what's going on with the promotion. I'm just trying to save my daughter, keep her safe from Undertaker. She's not safe anywhere because they've gone to his house. They've came and got her at the arena. So in this stead, Shane McMahon has kind of taken over control of the corporation and really kind of turned on Vince, basically telling him, you know, he's washed up. He smacked him in the face on one episode of Raw. So Vince is actually kind of slanting towards being a face now at this point. And Shamrock is really the only guy that's kind of remained loyal to him here in the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Shamrock said that the corporation when he joined was all about family. That's what Vince promised him. And Vince has done his best to help Shamrock and Ryan, and Shamrock's done his best to help Vince and Stephanie. So here he's kind of put out there. Him and Taker had brawled on Raw, and they used a baseball bat was involved, and that led to the match here between these two. So Shamrock basically effectively a face now, along with Vince, facing The Undertaker, who's still trying to take over the corporation, still torturing the McMahon family. And there was an infamous episode of Raw where Shamrock actually kept calling him Mark instead of Undertaker, which to me was one step too far. I was fine with them kind of pushing that Undertaker had gone off the deep end with his character, but coming out and calling him Mark was stupid.
I agree. Now you're kind of overdoing the whole Attitude Era, things are real thing. It's one thing to allude to it. It's another thing to actually say, your name's not Undertaker, your name's Mark.
Yeah.
I mean, it's stupid. But here's where the Shades of Grey really hurt the quality of the match.
I thought they did a good job establishing Shamrock as basically a face, though, after Mania.
Yes. For the sake of this match, yes. My problem is you've spent the entire last almost year pushing Vince as this maniacal, volatile, egotistical, you know, power broker, hell-bent on destroying the one guy we all love, and that's, of course, Steve Austin, who we'll get into in a moment. Now, all of a sudden, this other entity comes in. The Undertaker, you know, has turned heel. He's now this demonic, you know, snake charmer or something, or demon of the night or whatever, and is hell-bent on taking over the whole company, and he has this whole, you know, a gallery of mid-card minions. And now all of a sudden, Vince is sitting in the back with his, you know, he's sitting in the back with his daughter, and he looks so paternal. And it wasn't working. I understand. Now, of course, there is an end game here, which we'll get to in a couple months. But it's almost like they sacrificed. It was almost like the opposite of how Vince Russo normally books, sacrificing short term for the long term instead of the other way around, which is what he normally does. Obviously, there was an end game here with the whole Vince and Taker and all that, and I, you know, we'll obviously document it two pay-per-views from now. But unfortunately, and even the crowd, and again, we've said this more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
Providence Civic Center, and I'm not just saying this because my PIC is a member of that crew. Providence Civic Center crowds are always awesome, always. Now, of course, you know, we're only talking two for two, and you were there for both.
And don't forget, too, though, I've talked about in the past, there are guys, they're favorites in Providence.
Yes, yep.
And neither of them are on the show.
No.
And Austin had gotten there.
Mm-hmm.
Still not the level of the true favorites, who are Bret Hart and Randy Savage, two guys that Providence always beloved. So, you know, that hurts. Minor excuse, but...
Right.
And this match here is long. Taker is just not... all together at this point. He's just
really,
really banged up.
He spent three quarters
of
the match limping.
Yeah, he's really, really banged up, nagging injuries beyond belief. And they do a match that the fans had not been trained to be into at this point.
Right.
And they go 20 minutes, and it's basically straight up attempted submission style, which works with Shamrock. You know, Taker was doing his best to go with it. Obviously, he'd become much more proficient in it as the years go on. But at this point, not quite there. So 20 minutes, it's just hard for the crowd to really, really get into this one. And you expect with Taker and Shamrock more of an upbeat, high-energy brawl. Shamrock was a guy that brought a lot of energy to his matches. And here, they kind of sapped that away by working on the mat for most of the time.
Right. And Taker just is looking so... He's in good shape. I mean, he's pretty trim. But, I mean, he's just so gimpy.
I think his foot's still fucked up. His groin's messed up.
Yeah.
Just a lot of injury. I mean, when's the last time he had significant time off? It was, what, 94?
94, when he was selling the whole Yoko thing.
He's gone strong since then, not really missing a lot at all, and he's been going
hard. And that was a long, I mean, that was almost 8 months. I mean, it was January to August.
I mean, he's been going hard for 97 and 98. I mean, he was, you know, he didn't really catch a break till the end of 98 when he kind of took December and January off. But he, I mean, two straight years of really balls to the wall. And even 96, too, the whole feud with Mick Foley, I'm sure it took a lot out of him. So just a guy that's just racking up injuries, just nagging him and nagging him. And it all kind of culminates here in a match that really probably should have been different, much, much different.
Yeah, and much, much shorter.
Yeah, not 20 minutes.
Yeah, 20 minutes, 18, eight, almost 19 minutes.
I mean, they had a pretty... decent amount of depth on the undercard or the lower card guy. I mean, there's a lot of guys that aren't on the show that they have under contract. You got Dr. Death, you got Val Venus, Kane. I mean, there are guys they could have used in matches that they don't use here and could have eaten up some of this time. I know we kind of, it sounds like we're being hypocritical because we're bitching about long matches when the Russo bitch is always at the short matches, but these are almost comically too long. Like, you know, 19 minutes for Taker and Shamrock just really wasn't necessary.
No, it wasn't. And instead of it being kind of a high impact, you know, power spot match between two, you know, pretty strong dudes, you're getting all this ground and pound. And I mean, there's like a good 5 minute stretch where Taker's just taking his elbow and digging it into Shamrock's kidneys. I mean, really? Not necessary. Five, like three and a half, 4 minutes.
I mean, it's I'll credit them for trying it. It just wasn't the right time to do it.
No, it was a weird, a 9 minute brawl.
Yeah,
would have suited much better than a.
Yeah, just some wild. Have the Ministry come out. Have, you know, have Kane and Xbox. Just something crazy to really put over that this feud is hot. With Vince come out, anything. Mm-hmm. Instead of this just laying around on the mat for 20 minutes.
Yeah,
and it's one of those matches that I always want to like. I always want to give it credit because they tried something different. They went for it. And then you watch it and you're just kind of like, oh,
yeah.
It's meanders on for so long.
I mean, you've been saying all along, and again, you're talking about we're not being hypocritical, but you've been saying all along about how Shamrock, you know, needed to show his style, and just why now? You know?
Yep.
I mean, you saw hints of it in 98, but this was just not the right, this was not the right time for it. So the Undertaker wins to continue that, but instead of telling Taker, unfortunately, you know, he's in a high profile storyline here. Instead of being like, oh, maybe we need to arc this back a little bit and maybe let some other guys wrestle and give him less time, he gets pushed even further.
Yeah.
When he really needs a vacation.
The problem is he's in the midst of this
huge thing. Yeah,
pretty major feud. So it's just, it's hard to say.
It's hard to take him off. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It's unfortunate. The main event right now, there's roster issues. And we've not hidden that fact.
Mm-hmm.
Over our last few vaults, there's roster issues.
No, there's serious issues because you've already run Mankind into the ground. You're done with that.
Yeah.
Rock is on the verge of a change, mm-hmm. due to fan reaction. Undertaker's hurting. Triple H has not yet been elevated. Who else do you have?
Yeah.
You've run the Vince thing in. I mean, really, there's no one else at this point.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a struggle. It's a real struggle. Now, I can expound on my earlier comments as we've gotten to this match. Now, we are at our main event, the World Wrestling Federation Championship match. The highly anticipated, I think, after what was a great match at WrestleMania 15, the highly anticipated rematch between your World Wrestling Federation champion, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and the number one contender, The Rock. I don't think I've ever seen a scenario at this point where two main event guys, I mean, Steve's pop when mm-hmm. he comes out is off the charts. And like you said, the PC crowd, the Providence crowd, obviously, you know, behind him. But the pop they give The Rock is pretty good. It's not quite Steve level, but it's good.
Now, the fans have been wanting to cheer The Rock for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They've wanted to be behind him. Since the fall of '98, really, after SummerSlam.
Yeah,
they took it away from them.
Yep.
And now they're ready again. They're really ready, and even heading into this feud a little bit, Rock is already starting to distance himself just a little bit from the corporation. Just a little. Trying to pull away and be more of his own man.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell Triple H was starting to infiltrate a little bit into his spot. The night after Mania, Steve Austin came out to a big return to get his WWF title. However, mm-hmm. said winning the title is only half the battle. He wanted his prized Smoking Skull belt back that Mr. McMahon had stole at Breakdown.
Yep.
McMahon decided he'd had enough fighting Austin and was more focused on battling The Undertaker, protecting Stephanie. So he returned to the arena with the belt and told his son Shane to go to the ring and concede defeat and give Austin the title. Shane was not going to go along with this plan, so he gave the belt back to The Rock and says if Austin wants it back, then he has to give The Rock a title rematch at Backlash. On 4/12, Rock decided to give Austin some of his own medicine, and hearkening back to December 97, Rock went to a bridge with a Smoking Skull belt in tow, and threatened to toss it in the river. Austin decided to hunt him down, managed to find him on the bridge. They tussled, and Rock ended up throwing Austin off the bridge and into the river, and threw the belt in after him. The next week at Raw, Rock decided to hold a funeral service for Austin and arrived at the arena, which featured a gravesite and a hearse, and he had the Smoking Skull belt around his waist and let us know that he tossed a fake one in the river, and he saw the real one. He proceeded to read a eulogy for Austin, when all of a sudden Austin appeared on the Titantron in a monster truck, and he ran over The Rock's, $60,000 Lincoln Town car.
Yep.
Austin then drove into the arena, crushed the hearse, and the two fought on the gravesite with Austin taking control. Hit Rock with the belt, celebrated with some beer, until while Rock was laying in the grave, Shane McMahon came out from behind, appeared, cracked Stone Cold with the shovel, and announced that he would be the special ref for Backlash and was now the official leader of the corporation with Vince out of the picture. So, there you go.
It's a lot.
A lot going on. Yeah, for sure.
A lot to wrap your head around. Yep.
And you could tell Rock was, again, a little bit pulling away. Not completely. Just a little bit. And Shane has really stepped up and taken his father's spot as the true bastard of the promotion, the guy pulling all the strings, running the corporation, with Vince just kind of looking on now, worrying about protecting Stephanie, worrying about dealing with The Undertaker. He's just done with Austin.
Indeed. And this is where, to continue the answer that you of the question you asked me two matches ago, this was where they pushed up Triple H's advance, because I think they were realizing that, wow, you know, Rock, we can't keep Rock a heel much longer.
And now, you don't want him aligned with Triple H. It didn't make sense. You wanted, it was too much tension. They had feuded, you know, viciously the year before. Mm-hmm. And I like that they played that tension up. They didn't just make them instant buddies over this month. They had the tension there between the two of them in the corporation. Mm-hmm. And now, right after the show, pretty much Rock would switch allegiances. And you know, he wouldn't act like a clear-cut face immediately, but he's definitely starting to ebb that way.
Well, he does pretty much what Stone Cold has done the last 3 years, which is not change the way he acted.
Right.
Just direct his vitriol toward other people, you know, kind of the way, you know, we've seen this often. This is the way Savage acted in 87. Mm-hmm. Just all of a sudden the house show circuit, he's facing bad guys instead of good guys.
Yeah.
And Case is the same here. But this was where Triple H's new role has come.
Of course, on
his job is to eventually replace Rock as the stud of the corporation.
And of course, on Heat before this, Shane announced this to be a no DQ match.
Yes, no holds bar. That's why I was saying Heat was there's a big stip involved here. So
yeah, they fought. I mean, they started right away in the aisle, and I thought this match was better than WrestleMania. I don't know if you agree.
I do, and I love the match at 15. Always have, but this match is pretty good.
Yeah,
Shane's just total dickness has worked to perfection. But again, here's the shades of gray again. Vince has just been this megalomaniac, this, you know, power hungry lunatic, and now all of a sudden, because he's sitting next to his daughter on a couch, we're supposed to be like, "Aw,
I don't know." I disagree with you actually a little bit on that. I thought the Vince turn was pretty organic. I didn't think it was forced or just because he was with his daughter. I thought they really played up the conflict he had, where he was concerned about her, and he didn't really turn face as much. All the heels turned on him because of Shane, and he was just concerned.
That's a good point.
You know, and Shamrock is almost in the same boat as Vince. He only turns face because the other guys are being bigger dicks than they were, and he was just being loyal to his boss. So I really don't think it was like, oh, we all gonna love Vince now because he's, you know, whatever, cuddling with his daughter on the couch. I think it was more that it was almost like there were levels of heels at this point. It's like, yeah, the faces, then you had the mid-level heel, and then you had the real fucking dark pricks like Undertaker and Triple H and those guys. And then in the middle row, you had Rock, Shamrock, Vince, these other guys that are kind of tepid heels because they're being dicked over by the real heels.
Mm. So you're almost – this pay-per-view almost seems like the Ministry has usurped the corporation as the top heel faction.
Yep.
In the company.
Oh, definitely.
And we will see the various twists and turns over the next couple pay-per-views, because this, it really becomes a very not convoluted, but a very complex web of deceit, betrayal, and other sordid alliances. Unholy, if you will. That's the big word, unholy. Said that a lot in 1999. Everything was unholy.
Of course, Shane played a role in this. They kind of mocked the Survivor Series 98 match with the where Austin's counting and Shane counts two and then gives the double bird and gets out of the ring, which I thought was kind of cool. As he's outside the ring, Vince comes out and hits Shane with a Smoking Skull belt, so that kind of solidifies his face turn against
his
son.
That was cool. I will say that.
That was a good moment. And
yeah.
I think the fans wanted it. I think they kind of wanted to cheer for Vince a little bit. So then Austin would end up winning the match with the stunner, and retaining his title, Vince reluctantly handed the Smoking Skull belt over to Austin. Austin would be celebrating in the ring, and then all of a sudden we cut away for a minute.
Where to, Stephanie?
Of course, Stephanie was in a limo driven by The Undertaker, who turned around and the iconic moment. Where to, Stephanie?
That was actually a great moment. It was actually pretty
cool.
It was.
It was well done. It was.
And cool. The whole thing where, like, Vince is just glaring at... I will admit this. As much as I thought trying to make Vince a face was a little tough, they did try hard. I will give them that. And
again, I think it was organic. I really do. It's not like he's this buddy-buddy with Austin. Like, it all kind of made sense why all of a sudden he kind of had to be. I mean, he had Shane on this power trip and kind of pushing him out of the way, and he's concerned with his daughter, and it's all circumstantial stuff. You know, it's nothing like he's his buddies all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great moment where, you know, Stephanie's being carted out in the limo, you know, Taker's driving it, and Vince just has the look. He's looking at the ring going, oh, fuck. Oh, well, I got bigger fish to fry. You know, that's exactly the look he's giving.
Right.
And you know what? The guy's the best. What can I say? You know, I did everything I could. I threw the kitchen. That's the look that Vince has. That whole, I've thrown the kitchen sink at this guy. He's the man. I can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Or can I? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But we'll get to that as time progresses. But I will say that they did their best to kind of, that's what I'm thinking of. Cultivate the changes in all these characters. I tell you something, JR. This is complex writing.
Yeah, it is.
Think about it. You gotta give as much as, you know, the boss a little while ago was pissing and moaning about his bookers. You gotta give these guys backstage the even Vince Russo. You gotta give him, you know, I do shit on the guy a lot on this show, but I will give him credit. This is not easy. What they're doing with all of these characters is fairly complex and organic, yes, but very complex. That, how do I word it? That it's going along with the emotions of the matches and the fans. Really, this is top notch creativity at its best.
Yeah, I thought they really took a storyline that seemed shaky.
Mm-hmm.
And really have salvaged it and turned it around. I thought the Corporation Ministry stuff seemed kind of weird in February leading into Mania. I think they triggered it too early and it kind of muddied the waters. Remember we talked about how a lot of the stuff kind of peaked at Valentine's Day Massacre and then the build to Mania was weird.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've really turned the corner here. I think it's been pretty compelling, the Vince face turn, Shane taking over the Corporation. And over the next two shows, next week really, because we'll be doing both, we'll really talk about how things have turned and how they kind of fuck it up again. But I think at this point in time, they're really onto something with this angle. I think they've done a really good job making it seem pretty important. So what did you think of the show as a whole, Scott?
I liked it. I got to be honest with you, JR. This isn't an A-plus by any stretch. Mm. But
it's up there.
It's up there. I just had the page up. I was trying to remember what – I don't know if you have it up. I was curious what our grades were originally. But I got to tell you, I this is a show that I could probably pop in and be like, yeah, I think I'm going to watch this again. Yeah, there's some matches that are not stellar. Let's look at the grades.
You think it was better than Mania? Obviously, right?
Yeah. I mean, the undercard of Mania is pretty lousy. I mean, 15 is not like WrestleMania 2 or 9, but it's not great.
Mm-hmm.
I gave it a B-. You gave it a B.
Yeah.
That was our...
It's solid. Result. It really is. I mean, the Shamrock,
it really is.
The Shamrock match is what you make of it. It's one of those matches where, you know, kind of a novelty if you want to check it out. But the rest of the card, I think, is solid. There's a couple stinkers, but the stinkers are pretty short.
Yeah.
Outside of the Taker match.
And if you haven't seen it, definitely watch X-Pac and Triple H.
Yeah. It's
tremendous.
Yeah, that's great. And the main event's great, too.
Yep. So there you go. Backlash 99. Much better show than you may think. Is it better than Mania? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
The undercard of Mania is pretty
start awesome. A weird trend.
Yes. Unfortunately, things are going to change, but yeah. we won't delve into that now. We'll wait till next week.
All right. So we have a lot to talk about here. Okay. We're going to forego the feedback because we have two things we want to get to, yep. and then the schedule for next week as well. So the first thing we kind of hinted at on Monday night, and that is the upcoming trivia tournament.
Yes.
We're going to go through the rules
mm-hmm.
and make a couple announcements. So I will read through them now, and then we'll talk about what's to come.
Okay.
So last year, as we all know, Jay Hinch defeated Dave Hall in the finals
mm-hmm.
and won a nice little prize pack. So mm-hmm. we decided to do this thing again.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Hall and Jay Hinch are guaranteed spots because they made the finals last year.
Yeah, it's kind of like Andre and Hogan.
Right. So, yep, we are. True. We are starting with 24 entries. So with two in, that means the first 22 to sign up are locked in. If we get up to 30, so basically eight more, we'll go to 32. The thread will be locked at that point. If we get more than 24 but not quite 32, the extras will be considered alternates. So basically, once we get past 24, you guys should start recruiting to get up to 32. But I have a feeling we're not going to have a problem getting to 32.
I don't think so. And if you were an alternate, don't get upset. We'll explain why in a minute.
Yeah.
So
nobody else besides Hall and Hinchy are guaranteed a spot. This will be first come, first serve. Once the thread is posted, the first guys to sign up are in. So I don't care if you've been listening to the show since day one. I don't care if you made the semifinals last year. Doesn't matter. No holding of spots for anybody.
Nope. Only Hinchy and Hall. That's it.
If you want in, you have to be on the board at the specified time and make sure you get one of the slots.
Yep.
To enter the tournament, you must have a Skype account,
mm-hmm.
a microphone, either internal or external, and earbuds or headphones.
That's the most important one.
Yeah, because we want no fucking echo.
No echo, no dogs barking. Well, the dogs barking, you should have no choice. But no, yeah, no feedback. No.
Yeah, that's the main point, is the echo.
Yeah, the echo.
The plan is to record the first round across a couple of nights, most likely a Sunday and a Thursday, but that could change. So the difference between last year is that we used to try and record the trivia matchup on the night we're actually recording our shows.
Mm-hmm.
To save time this year, we're going to just line up a night and ask everybody just to be ready between that window. And then we'll air the segments edited across the episodes as the weeks follow. So we'll give you sufficient notice of your record time.
Yep.
And due to the volume of competitors, whether it's 24 or 32, that is a lot of matchups, we're not going to be as flexible this time with the record times. If you can't meet the proposed schedule, there's a chance you may be replaced. The scheduling stress is high enough, and having to constantly reschedule is just not an option this year. I mean, whether you want to watch Raw, whether you have to work, I mean, if you want to be part of this, we're going to work with you a little bit, but odds are we'll probably give like a 2 or 3 week notice and say, okay, guys, here is your window. It's going to be a Sunday night between, 8 and 11. Be available during that time. We'll call you. That's probably how it's going to go.
Exactly.
And then maybe a Thursday. So this way we catch the guys at work during the week at night and then also guys that aren't available on the weekend.
Right.
So maybe once we get the 32, then we'll kind of see what night fits who better, and then that's how we'll plan it. But we really can't fuck around this time. It was a lot of work, extra work last year trying to fit everyone's schedule. And this year we're just going to make you come to us instead. So the matchups will be determined at random, the first round and bracketed as such. If we have 24, the first round will be three-way dances. If we have 32, the first round will be standard one-on-ones. So if we get to 32, we're going to add an extra round to make it to straight one-on-one matches. 24 yep. will be like last year with the three-way dances.
With the three-way dances, yep.
Format's going to remain the same. We're going to have easy, medium, and hard level of questions. The contestants will choose their own question via a number. The first to three correct will win. Each round will see a different combination of the level of difficulty. If you have an issue with a question or answer, speak up before the next question is asked. Once the question is asked, the next question is asked, you forfeit your right to challenge. So you cannot.
Pretty much, it's the same as the NFL. You have time to throw your red flag. Once I start talking, you're done.
Right, and Scott doesn't stop talking, so you have very limited time.
Exactly.
To get that in. You can't.
Yes. Yes.
So no coming back to us. Yeah, no coming back to us a week later. No coming back to us later in the matchup. If you have a question, you bring it up at that point. And Scott and I will discuss and determine the course of action.
Mm-hmm.
Questions are not easy, PTB Nation. Be prepared. Study ahead of time. While most of the questions are wrestling-based, some will test your knowledge of the PTB podcast itself and how well you listen, whether it be interviews, guests, characters, different levels of things. So So those will be sprinkled in. Most of it's wrestling. Those will be sprinkled in. But I'm telling you, even the easy level are not easy. This is not for novices.
Yeah, this isn't, you know, what was the main event of WrestleMania 3?
No. Yeah. And a lot of these, though, you should know just based on listening to our vault and other shows as well. It's a lot of stuff we've talked about. We'll be working on the honor system. If we are any consulting, muting, or typing, it'll be an automatic disqualification, no warnings given. So just refrain from typing for 30 seconds while you're answering. Refrain from, you know, putting on mute to ask someone or type. We're trusting each and everyone. It worked out well last year. We're just trusting everyone not to cheat on this thing and just play it fair. Prizes will be revealed at the start of the tournament. Mm-hmm. The thread will be opened next Tuesday night, April 30th at 8 p.m. I will post the thread on the PTB message board 8 p.m. April 30th.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be your first come, first serve. Hall and Hinchy do not need to post. You guys are in.
Yep.
So the next 22 to 30 that post will be involved. I will put a reminder up on the Facebook page as well. So if you want in, better make sure you're available at the message board at that time because the spots probably will fill up quickly. So, Scott, did I miss anything?
No. I'm going through things now. We'll determine. We're going to talk about you know, the what type of questions you have to answer. You know, like last year we did like easy, medium.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not quite sure how we'll do that yet, but
that might change.
Yeah, that might change.
Yeah, little things may change, but we'll clarify those as we start.
Yeah. Like you said, first 1 to 3 points wins, you know, based on we use like the baseball system. If you went last, you get a chance to, you know. Did we have the semifinals to 5-2, or was it just the championship? That we'll have to determine. Championship will definitely be to 5.
No, they were both. Everything was to 3.
No, the championship was, I think, 5. Pretty sure the championship. Let me. I have last year's folder in front.
All right,
of me.
It doesn't matter. We can.
So we'll anyway, but that's minutia. That's not. Yeah. That has nothing to do with anything. Yeah. Just again, be fair. If you really think you're, you know, we got a question wrong, let us know immediately. And, you know, we'll admit that we're wrong. We're going to do a much better job. There were a couple of moments last year where a question was used more than once. And, you know, we're doing a much better job this year of fixing that. So you should not hear any repeats. And like I said, we're testing your knowledge as loyal fans. This isn't just your wrestling knowledge. We know you're wrestling. We know you're smart wrestling fans because you would be listening to us if you weren't. But, again, we're going to test interviews, moments. You know, anything. Mm-hmm. Anything that you've heard on this show over the last 215 episodes is fair game.
Yeah, the reason we're doing this now is to give you time to prepare. So
yep.
We're looking to start this most likely in mid-May or early June is when we'll start. And we know it's probably going to take most of the summer to get all these matchups in. So
yeah. That's
fine. But this gives you about a, you know, 3 weeks to a month to really prepare. Go back and listen to some old episodes. Study up in your wrestling trivia. Hit up the history of WWE website. Do some studying. Wikipedia. A lot out there. So there is your PTB trivia tournament update. Again, remember, Tuesday night, April 30th, 8 p.m., the thread will open.
Yes.
Now, Scott, that's not all we have tonight.
No.
We have another major announcement.
Yes.
We got one interview in the books, Christopher Daniels.
And if you haven't listened yet, please do. Fantastic interview. He was awesome.
Yes, he was.
He was awesome.
And we have another one now coming up on May 5th, which is only a couple weeks away. Mm-hmm. coming hot and heavy.
Yep.
Now, I kind of feel bad because I teased this on the Facebook page this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And speculation got wild. Like I said, it was almost like Survivor Series 96 when everyone thought Randy Savage was coming in. And
yes.
I feel bad. I hope I didn't stoke the fires too much because I don't want anyone to be disappointed because... it may not be the people they thought it was, but I think this is still a damn good interview for us to land.
Hell yeah.
You know, really lucky that we're able to get a hold of this guy and something I've been looking forward to for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that interview is...
It's me. It's me. It's DDP.
The one and only Mr. Diamond Dallas Page.
Maestro of the yoga.
Yes, you've heard me talk about the DDP yoga for over a year now. And he is graciously, we've talked to his PR people, able again through our buddy Ben Morse, hooked us up. And That's it. We'll be talking to him May 5th. Now, we're not really sure where this is going to go. We're probably going to talk a lot about the yoga stuff, and we're going to get into Jake and Scott Hall. That's going to be a questions we really focus on, too.
Yes.
And we'll try and get some stuff in his career. We're not really sure what kind of – this is a little bit more of a formal interview setup than we're used to as far as going through PR and setting things up and a guy that really has something to promote. So we're not sure. We'll do our best to get as many questions out there as we can.
Yeah,
as well with Paige. So we're really looking forward to that. This should be a really fun one.
Yes,
as our legend grows on the interview front.
Yes, and like I said, yeah, this was a different way of doing it. We didn't just hey, you know this guy? Yeah, he might want to be on. Cool. I mean, this was very, very step by step, and hopefully this leads. You know, maybe we can use this outlet that leads to other things. So
possibly,
hopefully. But I'm stoked. DDP, and we're right here in the Place to Be podcast.
Yes, May 5th, so that'll be an extra bonus episode that week. We'll be recording that on the Sunday.
Yes.
All right, so we will go ahead and wrap up. It's been an action-packed episode, back in the groove here after our little break. Good to be back. And next week, the Vintage Vault goodness continues. Monday night, well, maybe not quite goodness, but Monday night we'll be doing Over the Edge 99 / Owen Hart tribute. This is going to be a very unique vault. We are going to stick to the format for the most part. We won't be really talking about the matches, though. We will talk about the build and the fun facts because we want to keep the storylines going. We're also going to talk about what was going on that night with Owen Hart, our reactions, and then we will pay tribute to Owen towards the end of the show. So, you know, we're going to try not to ever offend anyone. We want to keep going. We think we owe it to the nation to talk about that show. And again, what was going on leading up to that show and what happened at that show. But we will not be giving match grades or ratings or anything like that. We don't feel that's necessary. And Wednesday night, we'll continue the Vintage Vaults with King of the Ring 99. So, and then, of course, that Sunday following, May 5th, will be the DDP interview. So those are your next three shows coming up. We got a big week ahead of us. So everyone, I hope you have a great weekend. For Scott, I'm Justin. We will talk to you Monday night over the Edge 99.
And D'Amato, study.
Yeah, you can't. Awful last time. Maybe we'll ask him how to pronounce his name. Yeah, that'll be one of the questions.
Yes. And Greenhouse, you too.
I got a good one. Well, I'll tell you off air. You ain't giving God the praise, then it's useless. Like when MCs try to make hits and them shits flop. Running races like they was Penelope pit stop. Envelop the hits, rock bottom. The bitch jock got him souped up. But his rhyme is beating his loops up. Like da da. Like da da. Clearly now, top of the pile with my style. Check the profile, it shifts like sundials. Crisp like young smiles, we rip and run wild. Intent to rock crowds, some bite like rock piles. Your game is disconnected, misdirected, disrespected. When we come in, expect some next shit. The J-U-R-A, classic cool forte. Get low down and dirty like the Illmore. My heart pump the rhythm of the militant street life. Soldier with composure up under the street light. The pro style, prototype, professional, media light, shine bright. Now kill all the bullshit, cheap talk and lip service. Jealousy and envy and undertone curses in your verses serve the purpose of a nigga living nervous, unsure and uncertain. What about the short circuit? Hey, like da-da, like da-da. My gift to gab should be sold in bags. Boost up the price tag, make a whack rapper mad. Rely on my right side, securing our tape tight, tasty tangibles to your man. Easily, tuna me, cleverly swelling my treasury. Vocal pedigree for you critics who try to measure me. But leisurely, I'm about to run you down my resume. Had a bundle of struggle from birth to my present day. Your love don't compute, perhaps you need a boost. A magical flu, some nose candy to chew. Before you get loose, express and tear the roof. You claim you got the juice, but you lame and out the loop. So I associated myself with fossilized figures. Cracked the summer sizzler, hit the real live niggas. My influence is gunshots and trauma units. Street trends, what material world friends? Like that. Hey, I'm Sean Lennon, and you're listening to Jurassic 5. Yo, you must have did see a pretty coffin where you like.
Because if you test the champion, man, you're going to die tonight.